Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Welcome to this special edition of The Romantic Side of Suspense Quick Takes. We are going to hear from many authors in the Long Hot Summer Christian Romantic Suspense volumes that are going to be released starting in early May through July. I'm part of Volume 4, and I'm so excited to share with you some of the stories that you can get in this amazing collection.
Next up is Sammy Abrams with her entry in the collection, Mine. So welcome back to my show, Sammy.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
So what past experience has had the most impact on making your heroine who she is today in this story?
So my heroine, her name is Jenny. And Jenny grew up with a mom that just, drug addict mom, just not there. And she went to live with her sweet aunt. And then being who she was and always searching for love, she married a guy really young. And they actually had an okay marriage, except for the fact that he was an alcoholic. And he treated her well, though. And when he died, his best friend was basically, I'll help you out. She found out she was pregnant. She had a baby. Come with me. I'll help you out. And he ended up basically abusing her. And she had, cutting her off from the majority of her friends and telling her she was worthless. And she was a nurse and she was just not good at it, so gaslighting her and making her feel trapped. And then he almost kills her. And that's when she was like, no, I'm out of here. He gets thrown in jail. But, she's like, nope, I have to go start over. So she goes back to her aunt. So she's recovering from all this through the love of her aunt and her daughter. And that's where she's like taking control of her life again. But it's still in the background, I'm not going to let this happen to me again type thing.
And what about your hero in this story? What's holding him back from finding love?
He used to be a homicide detective in a big town, and he put his work first above everything else, and his fiance had called him for help. He stayed at work finishing up, told her she'd be fine until he got there, and she ended up being killed. And so he is living with massive guilt from failing the woman he loved.
And what about the villain in this? What's your villain's motivation in this story?
The villain is obsessed with Jenny. In fact, to the point of possessing. That's why it's called Mine. Is for his mentality, she is his. And she disappeared on him, and he is determined to find her. And so when he does, he starts trying to take back with his.
Ooh, yeah. I don't think that's going to end well.
No, it really doesn't.
So let's talk about the setting a little bit. If it's a fictitious place, did you base it on a real place, or is it totally made up?
It's, for the most part, totally made up. I wanted a new... I set most of my stuff Midwest because I live in California, but I grew up in the Midwest. So a lot of times base my stories in the Midwest, in that area, but I wanted someplace new, and I wanted to have someplace where she could totally escape, almost a cross country type thing. So I just needed a really, a small town feel, and playing with that new location and something just a little different than what I've done in the past. So it's kind of like bits and pieces of places I've been, but I can't really say, I'm kind of, modeling it after this specific location. It's just kind of this conglomeration of a bunch of different places.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. I sometimes do that as well, but it is kind of fun to to mash up things together. I like this, I like this, and I'm putting them together.
usually I take like elements from my hometown that, you know, that fit the story, but it's not in my hometown. You know, it's like I haven't modeled the whole town after it, but it's like, ooh, I really like this piece. Like, I grew up in a small town, and we have a huge town square, and so a lot of my books will have a town square, type thing. But then, you know, there's something else that has nothing to do. You know, it's like, oh, that town that we visited, that was kind of cute. Let me mesh these two together or something.
Yeah.
I never do it specifically after a certain town. It's usually multiple ones thrown together.
Yeah, I love that. Such fun. So let's talk about the storyline. Why this particular story did you want to write?
This storyline was, it started out, I had visited the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force in Sacramento. I have a friend who was a detective on the task force. And I went and I said, hey, can I meet your team? Can I listen to them talk? Can I ask them questions? And so he arranged it. And I went to sit and visit with them. And they just, I didn't even ask questions. They were just telling story after story. It was almost like, oh, somebody really wants to hear what we do and are not grossed out at what we do. And I'm like, okay, yeah, throw them all at me. And there was a FBI agent, and he was telling his story, and or this one particular story. And I'm like, can I use that? And they're like, yeah, sure, because, you know, everybody teases him about this story, and it's kind of something that goes around, so it's not like it was classified. And I'm like, cool. But what the story was, and this is where it started, but I really didn't want to get totally into the Internet Crimes Against Children piece and do the whole child pornography, you know, that whole thing. I didn't want to focus on it, but I wanted this thread going through it. And so the true story is that he went and gave like a lecture lesson to some students, younger students, mind you. And he was, you know, teaching them about internet safety and, you know, cell phone safety and things like that. And he gave them his business card and said, if anything ever happens, let me, you know, it's like, you need to report it, basically.
Right.
And so this little girl went home and she mistakenly pushed in the wrong phone number and texted a child predator by accident.
Oh.
And the mom saw it and she was about ready to, you know, erase it. And the little girl was, no, wait. So she pulls out the business card, calls the guy. He comes in, and they actually arrested the predator.
Wow.
And I'm like, I have to use the story. I have, even if it's just a glimpse of something in the story, I have to use it.
Yeah.
So that got me into the, okay, what do I do with this? What do I do with this? Plus, I really just wanted to give a shout out to the ICAC task force, because what they do is not easy. You know, they see horrible, horrible things every day, all day. And I just kind of want to give a shout out to them. And, yeah, the story has the pieces of this in it, but that's not, it goes someplace else. You know, so the whole story is about that. But that's kind of the setup to get the hero and heroine together.
Ah, I love that. That's such fun when we can use those connections. Well, we are almost out of time, Sammy, but let's leave our short time with, what is your book's tagline?
Okay, the tagline is, a single mother haunted by her violent past and a guilt-ridden detective battling his own demons must join forces to protect her daughter from a child predator and uncover a twisted obsession that threatens to destroy their fragile trust and their lives.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about it on my show today. Yes.
Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome Jerusha Agin to the Summer Collection podcast with her submission, Trapped. So thanks for coming and sharing about that story.
Thanks for inviting me.
So who is the most important person in your heroine's life in this story?
So my heroine in this story is named Kristen, and the most important person in her life is Rosalia, a teen girl that she rescued from a horrific situation and then adopted as her daughter. Kristen will do anything to not only protect Rosalia, but to give her a happy life that will set her up for a bright future.
Oh, I love adoption stories. Those are so fun.
I know why you do.
Yeah, I know. I do. They're great stories.
The experience. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your hero's favorite pastime in this story?
So my hero is Sean, and it used to be that his favorite pastime when he wanted to relax was helping out on his grandparents' farm, spending time outdoors in the peaceful countryside. But since his grandparents were cheated out of the farm, Sean doesn't have that option anymore. He's hoping to get the farm back if he can get a lawyer's help before the new owner raises the land and the buildings, like the wonderful farmhouse that they had and the barn.
So what about your villain in this story? What motivates your villain?
So the villain in this story actually is more than one villain. So it's hard to answer specifically, and I'm always not wanting to give too much away. But one of the villains has revenge and punishment as his primary motivations.
Yes, and those can definitely lead to some pretty sticky situations, I think, for heroes and heroines. Yes, yeah. And so if this, it sounds like you base this maybe on a fictitious place. It is a fictitious place. And so did you base it on the location on something real?
So, yeah, it is a fictitious place. And I didn't really base it on something real. So much as was inspired by other fictional towns. So I had a lot of fun creating this very sweet small town where this story takes place. And the inspiration came from the Hallmark style small towns that you often see in like romantic mystery movies and romantic comedies. And that just kind of came to life in my mind as the setting for this story. And I thought it would be fun to see what happens when scary suspense and danger show up in one of those idyllic little towns.
Ah, yes. Yeah, it can be quite shocking sometimes, I think. So I like that. So what about the genesis for this story? Where did that come from?
This one was a little more unusual for me in that the first scene just suddenly came to me when I just started thinking about what was another story idea I could have to write about. And God just gave me this, the first scene, which really told me the concept of the story right away. So I don't want to give too much away, but that first scene shows a woman in a really tough spot where she feels it's kill or be killed. And the story then deals with the repercussions of what happens there in that first scene.
Oh, that sounds definitely off with a bang kind of story. Yeah, those can be really fun to write. So we're going to wrap up our short time together with what's one thing you want readers to know about your book?
I think it's helpful to know that this story deals in part with human trafficking and prostitution, shining light on this very real and horrible crime that targets women and children. And I know that some people are interested in reading about that topic, but other people like to avoid it because they're afraid it will bother them too much. So I like to tell people, you know, the topic is there, but I also don't show it in a graphic way at all. So there's no worries if you're sensitive when it comes to reading about that issue, which honestly I am. So I'm careful how I write it as well. But that topic then also provides a springboard for the gospel message of forgiveness and mercy in the book.
Ah, I love that. I love that we can tackle tough topics and shine the light of Christ on them. So thank you so much for sharing about Trapped today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome Jessica Ashley to talk about her entry in the collection Lima. So welcome to my show, Jessica.
Thank you.
We're going to get started with the heroine, and I love that you picked this question. What past experience has had the most impact on making her who she is today?
Well, Lonnie, when she was 2, was found wandering along the side of the road. She had been abandoned by her parents. They were both addicts and just didn't really care that she existed. And so the man who found her, he and his wife adopted her. And so she got to grow up in this very, Christian family, very focused on God and moving forward from all of that. But I feel like that initial, even though she was so young, that initial experience really shaped her and pushed her to want to be, in her mind, worthy of the family that brought her in. Even though she doesn't have to prove anything, it still really forced her to want to be better and to grow in every possible way she can so she can help people too.
Ah, I love that. And yes, those early childhood traumas can really impact our adult selves. So that is so true.
Yes.
What about your hero? What is his biggest regret in this story?
His is letting her go. So they were best friends growing up. He always had a thing for her, but was just never really felt like she reciprocated those feelings. And so he actually ended up marrying, like rushing into marriage right out of high school, where she went off to medical school. And so his biggest regret is that, especially given that his marriage then just massively dissolved because the woman that he married had no interest in being married and went out and stepped out on him, and it was just a big mess. And so he really regrets not being upfront with her from the beginning to have avoided all of that heartbreak.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, well, our foolish younger selves sometimes, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, in this story, what motivates your villain?
So I was reading through these questions, like I've got to be careful with this because it's a mystery. So,
Okay, yeah, feel free to say they. That's fine.
All right. So this particular villain is motivated by their desire to feel desired, to feel wanted. Like they want to feel that connection and that love that everybody around them seems to be finding, and they just can't seem to keep it. So they're very motivated by that.
And what about the story setting? Why this particular setting for this story?
Well, it's set in Texas on a ranch. I live in Texas and I grew up on a ranch, and so I love the dynamics at play with that. Like some of my childhood was spent on one. And I just love the family dynamic as well as the small town setting. I'm a sucker for a small town. And so that's why I picked Pine Creek.
And what about the underlying positive message of your story?
The message of this one is all about staying true to your faith, even when everything around you is going wrong. So when you're stuck in the middle of the storm and the waves are up and you feel like you're drowning and you're literally doing everything you can to tread water, that in those moments you turn to God and you let Him be your strength, because in our weakness, He is strong. And so that's the message of
Ah.
this one.
Oh, I love it. We can never hear that too much, can we? No, yeah. Always gonna. I love it when we can use our books to remind ourselves and our readers about those wonderful truths found in God's Word. So let's close our short time together with, what is your book's tagline?
So for this one, it is Dr. Lonnie Hunt is facing the darkest moments of her life, and this broken-hearted sheriff is her only hope.
Ah, I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your entry in our Long Hot Summer collection, Jessica.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome Sarah Blackard to my show to talk about her collection, a novel, Tracked Secrets. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
I know. It's always fun to talk with Sarah as we could get off on that little tangent, but we'll stay focused on the book this time. Focus on the book.
Okay.
But I love that you picked this question because we do get to talk about names. So why did you pick this particular name for your heroine in this story?
Okay, so her name is Phela, and it's from the Bible, and it means pause, reflect. And we just got back from a trip to Honduras to help out a orphanage down there that we've been supporting. And one of the missionary daughters, her name was Phela, and I hadn't ever heard that. And you know, as far as for a name, and when I looked it up and it said, you know, pause and reflect, I thought, oh my goodness, that's like perfect for my heroine because she's gone through a lot. She was a professional surfer and got in a really bad accident and no longer is able to do that. And so she's having to like reflect on what is she going to do now? So I thought that was kind of perfect.
Yeah. I love that we can give our heroes and heroines names that can help them in some respects with what they're going through or what they need to go through or reflect, like you said, like that. So what about your hero? Where did he grow up in this story?
So both the hero and the heroine grew up in Kauai. They he's her best friend's older brother, and they kind of grew up together. So
great.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. So what about one redeeming quality about your villain?
I guess that one was kind of hard, actually. No, all villains have to be multidimensional, correct? And
I
would say that his redeeming quality is that he's very dedicated.
Okay, yeah. Dedicated doing bad things, I'm guessing, but hey, we all have to have a goal.
We all have to have a goal, and he's very focused on his.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is so true of human nature, Sarah, so I can definitely see how that can happen. So what about the setting for this story? Why did you have to pick this setting for this story?
Well, the series that this story is going to be connected to is set in Hawaii. And my brother lives on Kauai, and we went there a couple of years ago to visit. And, all my other books are set either in Alaska, where I live, or Colorado, where we grew up. And while I was there, I was like, man, it would be so much fun to have a series set here in Hawaii. So that's why I picked that setting, but I picked Kauai specifically because of my brother. So I wanted them to have kind of a little more wilderness in this first book and have a little more isolation than they would have in some of the other islands. So.
Ah, I love it. And hey, you know, if you have to visit again, that would just be tragic.
I know. tragic. Right off.
Yes, I know. Terrible.
So terrible.
Oh, the things we do for writing, I tell you.
Yeah.
So what was the easiest part of writing this book for you?
I think maybe the easiest part was writing Phela's side character, her little Jack Russell Lily. I had a lot of fun with that, just kind of making him just this little, you know, protector that is very, very set on keeping her safe, but also he's just so small. So, and has attitude and, you know, give their looks, and, you know, she talks to him, and he kind of answers in his own way, and I just had a lot of fun with that.
Ah, I love it. We can give our characters pets or other things that can give them that little extra something that tells the reader something about their character. So that sounds like a fun thing to have included. So unfortunately, we're almost out of time, Sarah. So let's close with, what is your book's tagline?
All right, here it goes. The storm is closing in, and so is the man who wants her for himself.
Ooh, mysterious. Well, thank you so much for sharing about Track Secrets for our Summer Suspense Collection podcast. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome Jenna Brandt to the show with her summer collection novel, Branded by Fear. So welcome, Jenna.
Hi.
So we're going to start with your heroine, and I love this question. I like almost all my questions, but this is one of my favorites. What does your heroine keep hidden from everyone in this story?
So that's actually what's kind of cool about her, is that she kind of has a bit of mystery around her, and I purposely didn't want it revealed right away what the details of her, what she's hiding and why she's so scared. But she's hiding from her past. She left her hometown of Faith Valley, which is in Texas, to start over about 100 miles away in Mission, Texas, because she got caught up with the wrong guy and made some bad choices, and it ruined her reputation and almost her career.
Yeah, I think I'll probably keep that hidden, too, for a while.
And so that becomes a kind of a big thing through it, and she has, like, a lot of guilt over it, and that plays a lot into the whole thing and the whole storyline.
So what about your hero? What is his greatest fear in this story?
So he is a deputy with the search and rescue team, and his biggest fear is losing someone during a search and rescue mission. He's come close a couple of times, but it's never happened. And his goal is to keep it that way. He really is afraid of losing someone and not being able to do his job.
So let's switch to the villain in this. What's motivating your villain in this story?
So the villain is set on revenge. He blames my heroine, Mandy, for what happened to him back in Faith Valley because she testified against him, which ties into the whole hidden past of what she's trying to run from, what she's trying to keep hidden.
Yeah, well, revenge is never a good idea. So,
right?
Yeah, I know. So what about the setting? How do you feel that the setting moves your story forward?
Well, the book takes place in the fictional small town of Mission, like I mentioned before, and the surrounding hill country. It's actually very much a search and rescue at its core. The hero is works on horseback, he runs the local team of deputies that do search and rescue. He has to search for the hero's ex, who is the villain of the story, who has escaped from prison and is in the area. And then due to unforeseen circumstances, the hero and the heroine end up trapped in the hill country due to a storm. So the setting is super important to the plot line.
Yeah, I love how we can use the setting to ratchet up that tension for it. What about the genesis? How did this story come about?
Well, I always joke that I'm getting older and I'm super into documentaries. Like, I never thought I'd be that person, but I love documentaries. And I was watching one the other day, clearly several months ago, and I was watching it, and there was a team of horseback search and rescue officers looking for a missing person. And I always assumed, like, they were on foot or whatever. And I was like, oh, wow, that's so cool. Wouldn't that be a fun premise? So I set the majority of my books in Texas, and there's a lot of remote areas in that state. And I thought it would be fun twist on the search and rescue books that I've already written to have it be centered around this horseback search and rescue team. And he has two brothers that are on the team with him and a couple other deputies. And this book is book one in what's going to be my Heroes on a Mission series, a horseback search and rescue series.
Ah, I love that. That is so cool. I love how we can use things that we see or hear and turn them into stories. So we're going to close our short time together with, what is one thing you want readers to know about Branded by Fear?
So I think that it's a redemptive arc that through the whole book, not only for the main characters, but a lot of other people within it. It deals heavily with forgiveness, not only of others, but of yourself and accepting the Lord's forgiveness. And it's very heavily through the whole book, and even the villain having to like really look at himself rather than blaming others and accepting his own responsibility for what happened and how that changes him and how he even finds redemption through the series, through the book.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your Long Hot Summer collection novel, Branded by Fear.
Thank you for having me.
And now I'm talking with Sarah Davison with her submission in the collection 1-9. So welcome to my show again, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to start with the heroine. And I like, this is one of my fun questions, I think, about if your heroine has or could have a pet, what would it be? And please tell us the pet's name.
Oh, right. Yeah, so my heroine is, her name is Brooke Turner. And I don't have a lot of animals in my books, but when I do, I always have a lot of fun with it. So Brooke does have a dog. She's got a 7-year-old husky that she calls Moonshine. And when the hero asked her about that at one point, she says it's because the dog's fur reminded her of the color of the moon glowing on snow. So that's where that name comes from. So Moonshine's a 7-year-old husky. Unfortunately, Brooke has been in hiding on the run for 5 years. So they've been separated. Moonshine's been with her mom and brother. So not to give any spoilers, but there may be a touching reunion by the end of the story.
There may be. Maybe. A little hint of that. That would. Yeah. Well, we like happy endings. So, you know.
Oh, me too. Yep.
Yes. So what is holding your hero in this story back from finding love?
My hero is Detective Chase Washington. So he's a police detective. He's had two really serious long-term relationships. The first one ended after his girlfriend went to a funeral of another cop with him, and then she decided she couldn't be involved with the cop. And it took him a while to get over that. That was really painful for him. And then he got involved with someone else, and it got really serious. They went out for a couple of years, and he was about to ask her to marry him when she broke up with him for the same reason. She said she just couldn't. She just worried about it too much when he was at work, and she just couldn't be involved with a cop, which was something he wished he had known, you know, a couple of years earlier. But so once this had happened to him again a second time, he just decided he was not going to get involved with anyone, certainly not before he retired from the force. So at the beginning of the book, he is not open at all to any kind of love because of that.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Come on, women, step up. Too. I have a feeling your heroine is going to help him overcome that. But no spoilers. I have not read the book, spoilers. So, and who are in this story, who or what does your villain love the most?
All right. So I have a very creepy villain named Zane Phillips, and he's been in prison for 5 years, and the whole time he's been plotting revenge against Brooke. So when he's released, they're both at a crime scene alone, and he could kind of grab her then, but he doesn't, because what he loves the most is the chase. So he lets her go, and he spends the next 6 months tracking her and following her until he kind of manipulates a situation where she and Detective Washington are out in the wilderness, cut off from civilization and communication, and in the woods after a tornado, and then he starts to hunt them down. So that's what he loves. He loves the game. He loves the chase. It's really fun for him. So, yeah.
Yeah. Creepy.
Yeah.
All right. So you mentioned a little bit about them being like in the wilderness and whatever kind of. So how does the setting move your story forward?
Yeah. So the setting is actually a really big part of this book. It's set in kind of northern Ontario, Canada. So very barren, just trees, rocks, lakes. and very few people, and he manages to get them up there and with no way of communicating with anyone. So for like 3 days, they're running through the woods, trying to get away from him, and also dealing with, you know, all the stuff of the wild, like weather and wild animals and being hungry and being cold and thirsty. So there's a lot that they're having to deal with. And so the setting is really, it's almost another character in the story because it really contributes to what's happening.
Yeah, definitely. What about the underlying positive message of this story?
You know, I always have a theme in my books, and sometimes it's a little bit, you know, just kind of woven in a little bit more subtle, but this one is very, very overt. It's even in the title. So the title of the book is 1:9, and that is from Joshua 1:9. The verse that says, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So that is the theme that's just kind of repeated over and over through the story. The heroine actually has 1:9 tattooed on her wrist. She did that when she first went into hiding, so that whenever she was afraid, she could look at that and sort of run her fingers over it, and it would give her courage. So I found, even as I was writing the story, that was really an encouragement to me. And so I'm really hoping and praying that it will be for readers too, because you know, it's pretty timely. There's a lot going on in the world, and we need to be reminded to not be afraid, because God is always with us, right?
Yes, yeah, definitely a good reminder for us in any time in our lives. So that I love that. So we're going to close our short time, Sarah, with what is your book's tagline?
Okay, the tagline is, he is everywhere. And that's kind of a double meaning, because as they're going through the woods, and they've been out there for like 3 days, and she kind of starts to lose it a little bit. And she starts to see and hear the villain everywhere. She thinks he's everywhere. And once she kind of calms down and she reminds herself of that Joshua 1:9, she remembers he is everywhere. It's really God. It's everywhere. And he's before them and he's behind them and he's with them and they're not alone. So that's sort of the double meaning in that tagline.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your book in this collection.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always great to chat with you, Sarah.
I'm delighted to welcome N.Y. Dunlap to my show with her contribution to this summer collection, Taken Across Oceans. So welcome, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're going to get right into it with your heroine. Who is the most important person in her life in this story?
Okay, so for this one, let's see. This one is kind of complicated because Jasmine sort of doesn't have anyone in her life. She's in Witness Protection Program, and she really just cares about her students. She's a computer science teacher, and she's like praying for them, and she'll always have the open door policy for anyone who needs. But in this, she puts herself in a predicament when she realizes her star student is being groomed. So when Vicky goes missing, the book begins right when Jasmine is risking her life in Witsec to find her.
Ah, I love that. That's great. So what about your hero? What's holding him back from finding love in this story?
Let's see. So Maddox is kind of holding himself back. So he's just retired from the Navy, and he's actually in Big Bear Lake in a really expensive cabin his family owns. And so he really doesn't even want to be bothered. But Jasmine appears, and she's looking for this young girl, and he's cynical and assuming she wants to just rob him blind. But it was a really cute meet. I guess I would call it a neat cute, even though it was a little awkward for them.
Ah, yeah, I love how we can have them interact with each other in awkward and weird situations. That's one of the things I love about being a writer. So what about your villain in this story? Who or what does your villain love the most?
Okay, so that one, my villain is Ali. He is actually a childhood best friend for Jasmine. She grew up in Saudi Arabia. She was a child servant for his parents. And instead of helping free her, he ends up joining the family business, which is weapons trafficking. So they're into trafficking, and she ends up having to run away from him. So he's the villain, he's crazy, and he uses his her student, Vicky, to actually get back at her.
Ah, okay. Little revenge going on there.
Yeah, a whole lot of revenge.
So for you, what was the biggest challenge of writing the book in the setting where you put it?
Okay, so the setting, one of the biggest challenges for me is just showing readers a different light of things that we love. Like, we like going on vacation, and you want to go, like, to the ocean or cruises or whatnot. But instead, for Jasmine, she was trafficked on her way to freedom. And so she doesn't see the ocean as beautiful. So it was kind of a challenge trying to get her phobias right in this regard.
Oh, yeah, that would be. And what about the underlying positive message of Taken Across Oceans?
Okay, so this one is like the best question ever, because I always think about it when I'm reading a book. So, well, a Christian book, obviously. But so for Jasmine, it was just she's kind of in WITSEC, and she really doesn't have a life, and just being nosy and whatnot. But when she loses the student, when the student gets taken, when Vicky is taken, she has to come face to face with old feelings, bondage of the mind, feeling icky, and as if she doesn't deserve to be free, which we all know is not the case when we fall in love with Jesus. So I just wanted to share a short line with the book. It's really, really short. That just sums up the message.
Okay.
She's in, like, in a really dark place. I hope readers know that it's kind of, I do add some funny elements, and I'm really light on the fact that it has these different forms of trafficking. But here's a line from the book. God loved her. He really, really loved her. She didn't have to settle for having her mind kicked around by the enemy.
I love that, Nicole.
Thank you. I know it's a really short line. I got a lot of cool suspenseful lines and some pretty romantic lines for the romantic suspense thing going on, but that one really, I really wanted people to know. Sometimes we get stuck in our heads and in our minds, and we don't have to allow that from the enemy.
Yeah, that is so true. Well, we are going to close our short time together with, what is your book's tagline?
Okay, that's a simple one. A cynical ex-Navy SEAL and a crabby high school teacher with too many secrets.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on my show and sharing about Taken Across Oceans.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now I'm delighted to share a bit about my entry into this collection, Fatal Past. What past experience has had the most impact on making my heroine who she is today? For Eve Davenport, it's the loss of her child. Her upbringing was harder than she revealed to her high school boyfriend, Jefferson Smith, but it was the loss of her baby that drove her into being a pediatrics doctor and away from her uncle, who had been her guardian. For my hero, what was his biggest regret? That he broke up with Eve, his high school sweetheart. Jefferson has always regretted what he thought at the time as being a noble gesture to not encumber Eve with a boyfriend during her first year away from home at college. He realizes, with the hindsight of an adult, his teenage self also didn't trust that the love they had was strong or real enough to survive the long-distance dating necessary because they were going to different colleges. He thought breaking up with her before the end of their senior year would soften the blow that he was sure going to come eventually. Who or what does my villain love the most? Money. As the Bible tells us, the love of money is the root of all evil, and my villain loves money. My villain cannot get enough of money. In this story, the villain's love of money drives him to murder and kidnapping and a host of other crimes because they want more money. Why did I pick this story's setting? In this story, I returned to Twin Oaks, Virginia, a fictitious town set in the Shenandoah Valley. It's a setting for my novellas and another short novel, and I love the versatility of a small town amidst apple orchards and the Blue Ridge Mountains in the distance. The reason I created Twin Oaks to begin with was that while there were a lot of quaint towns in the Shenandoah Valley, none were situated exactly where I wanted one to be, so I thought I would make one up. It's been fun to add restaurants and stores as well as a small police force to the town, and I hope to continue using it for future novellas, and including setting the sequel to Fatal Past in that as well. For me, one of the easiest parts of writing this book was the plot. I got the idea for the plot, and it was pretty easy for me to just kind of think about how it would impact the hero and the heroine and their backstory and their connection. And I love writing second chance romances. I think those are just really fun to write as well. And what is the tagline for Fatal Pass? I am so glad you asked. It's, the truth was buried years ago, now it's back, along with dangers, secrets, and a second chance at love. I hope you'll enjoy my story and the others in this collection.
Next, I have Lily Hahn with her book in the collection, Alaskan Family Ties. So welcome to my show, Lily.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we're going to start with your heroine's name. Why did you pick this particular name for her?
Well, my heroine's name is Nalani, and that means serenity in the skies. And Nalani was an orphan, and she didn't have a name, and so her first family gave her that name in hopes that when she looked at the sky, she would know that God's peace was always with her.
Oh, I love that. I love how we can add that extra layer to our characters with names like that. That's really cool. So what about your hero? What is holding him back from finding love in this story?
Yeah, so Davin has been recently given a new post as the lead special agent at the new field office, and he's just trying to prove his worth. His dad is a very powerful person, and he wants to prove that he is completely capable of this post, and he has no time for love because he's just got to prove himself to the rest of the world.
Ah, I have a feeling your lovely heroine might change his mind. Not giving anything away or anything. So who or what does your villain love the most in this story?
So Ian, he has a sense of loyalty to a fault almost to his family. But he is the antagonist. And so he has this idea that land was taken from his family and he wants it back. And he's willing to do whatever it takes to do that and to keep it for himself.
Yeah, that can definitely stir up some not so good feelings and motives.
<Yeah.
laughs> So what about the story setting? Why this particular setting?
Actually, my family and I went on vacation to Alaska a couple summers ago, and I absolutely fell in love with the beauty and just the ruggedness that it was, and I just really wanted to capture it. And then this idea just kind of popped into my head, like, you know, they always do, seem to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what, this would be a perfect setting for this story. So I hope I do it justice in making people be able to feel the rugged beauty of Alaska.
Oh, great. I'm sure it's on my bucket list to go. One day I'll make it. What about the underlying positive message of this story?
So, like I said before, Nalani, right, is orphaned. She doesn't know who her parents were. And, you know, Devin and his dad have their own issues to work out. But underlining it all, right, is this idea that no matter where we are, no matter our circumstances, God's with us, and we're never alone, no matter what happens.
I love that. That's just such a great reminder for us all. Well, thank you so much for sharing about Alaskan family ties. And before we end, can you tell us, what is your book's tagline?
Sure. It's Finding Belonging in the Wilds of Alaska.
Ah, nice. Well, thank you for sharing, Lily. I'm sure this is going to be a fabulous read and part of our collection.
Thank you for having me.
I am delighted to welcome Kristen to my show. She is going to talk about her entry in our collection, Beneath the Crushing Waves. So welcome, Kristen.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's great to be here.
So we're going to dive right in. Beneath the Crushing Waves. See how I did that?
That was good.
I'm so clever. What past experience has had the most impact on making your heroine who she is today?
So for her, it's kind of heavy. 8 years ago, right before December, Christmas time, her husband died tragically in an accident. And so to provide for her young daughter, she's moving back in with her parents in her childhood home on Rosemary Beach to make ends meet, and then teaching at her alma mater for summer school. So she's got a little heavy load on her right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I gotta love those great backstories we can give our characters, though. I'm sure it's all gonna work out. So, what about your hero? What's holding him back from finding love in this story?
So he has a different story, but he also has come back to Rosemary Beach, but for a different reason. So right after Christmas time, his senior year of high school, his parents split up. They divorced, and their family basically, half of them went to one coast, half of them went to the other. And so he spent his 20s recovering from that drama and then also getting his footing in his law enforcement career. But now that he's almost 30, he's finding that he's longing for his own family and his own love story and just wondering if that's going to happen.
And what about the villain in this tale? Who or what does your villain love the most?
So he pretty much loves himself the most, although that is not what he would tell you. He would tell you that he loves other underprivileged kids like himself, and that what he's doing is for them, so that instead of being underprivileged, they gain an upper hand early in life. Kind of a twisted mentality there.
Yeah,
but that's the villain,
yeah.
Right? They've always got a reason for what they're doing. It's just warped.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned the setting already, but if it's a real place, what's one thing you changed to make the setting fit your story?
So Rosemary Beach and the surrounding area on Florida's Panhandle is definitely a real place, and it's so beautiful. But I added, if you will, a fictitious school where she teaches, Waterside Academy, and a fictitious church, Waterside Church, so that no real schools or churches were named and anyone gets, like, you know, ruffled about that. But it is such a beautiful place in real life.
Ah, yes. And it's always fun to twist things a little bit.
Exactly.
Exactly. So what about the genesis for this story? Where did this, what started this whole story off for you?
What started it is actually a real life experience. So the inciting incident in the story, the opening, actually happened to my family on vacation in the Rosemary Beach area. A sedan swerved into oncoming traffic in our lane and just missed us by inches. And as this driver is, like, barreling past us, it really looked like he was having a seizure. And we were just like floored. We, you know, called 911. We never found out what happened because first responders took over and took care of him in the situation. But I immediately thought, I need to write a story about this because this doesn't happen every day. And what could have caused this? And then, you know, the writer's what if just kind of takes over.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely familiar with that. So we're going to close our short time together with what's one thing you want readers to know about Beneath the Crushing Waves?
So we already talked about my heroine and just the fact that she's gone through this major trauma of losing her spouse and just dealing with that crushing grief that follows. And in the story, she learns a little bit about lament and how it can help a person heal just by praying through the pain. Basically just grappling with the paradox of this awful pain and also the truth that God is still sovereign and good. And so I can't go obviously into depth about that in a fiction story, but I just hope that what readers see, if there's any reader who's going through their own trauma, that they would look into how that can help them in their own healing journey. So that's one thing I hope they take away.
Well, thank you so much for sharing about your summer collection entry, which is Beneath the Crushing Waves.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome Kara Putman to my podcast, my special podcast on the Long Hot Summer collection with her entry, A Mistaken Justice. So welcome, Kara.
Thanks so much for having me, Sarah. It's fun to be here today.
So we're going to talk about your heroine, and if she could or could, if she has or could have a pet, what would it be? And please tell us the pet's name.
So Sydney would definitely have a cat because she is not all about needy individuals. Her life is way too busy because she's an attorney who's in transition, and so she just doesn't have time for a pet that demands walks and lots of affection and extra time. So she would have a cat, and she would probably name the cat after one of her favorite book characters. So maybe something out of a Tolkien book, or I just finished rereading A Wrinkle in Time, so I'm thinking Charles Wallace or Meg.
I love that. I love that. I just named a dog in a book that came out this year, Bingley from Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, because I thought this came to me just as fun. Yeah, fun little literary reference there. Let's talk about, I know it's fun when we can do that with our characters, I think. So your hero, if he could have a superpower, what would that be in this book?
So if Logan could have a superpower, he would probably turn back time, like Superman, you know, how he can go kind of fly backwards and turn back time. And he would do it so he could go back in time and save his brother who's murdered, and that's kind of the inciting incident. He would, if he could, go back and rewind that because his brother ends up is investigating something that actually involves Logan. And so he has some guilt and things from feeling responsible, even though he's not.
Yeah. That'd be a great superpower. I think we'd all like that occasionally, right? Go back in time and fix things. So you mentioned a murder. So we all know that we have villains in our books. So how does your villain unwind in this story?
So, you know, that was, when I was looking at that question, I was like, that is such an interesting one, because we're always, as writers, we're supposed to climb into our, even our villains' heads, and we're supposed to think about, you know, how they, every villain has something that's, you know, good about them, somebody loves them, not everybody is 100% evil, you know, all those kinds of things. And as I was thinking about the villain in this book, I was like, he's the kind of person who would volunteer at like a humane society or be a big brother in a mentoring program, because he really is not, I mean, he's a pretty good guy who's gotten caught in a bad situation.
I love that. I think a great way to think about, you know, because sometimes our villains, they're not like just pure evil. Occasionally we have people who are like that, but most of us have all those shades of gray and stuff. So that's great. Yeah, I can see some of my my bad guys doing some good things, even though they've done some really bad things too. So I love that. That's cool. So let's talk about the setting. If it's a fictitious place, what did you base it on?
Yeah, so normally when I'm writing books, I write them in real locations. But this particular series in this book, it's set in Nebraska, and the other two books in the series were set in Lincoln. But because I'm using a real law where the county attorneys are also the coroners, but I'm having the county attorney potentially make a mistake in declaring the cause of death, I didn't want to put it in a real county where it would look like I was saying that that real county attorney who's in office right now had done something similar. And so I created a fictional county in a real part of Nebraska that's called Little Switzerland or Little Czechoslovakia, because there were so many Czech immigrants into that area. And so I had so much fun doing research about kind of what the culture's like. And it's actually really near where my family lives and where the family farm was for generations. So I could picture it in my head, but it doesn't actually exist. If you looked for Tyler, Nebraska on a map, it's not there. But yeah, I could tell you exactly where it is because I put it in the middle of real places.
Yeah, no, that's like the town in my story in this collection too. I needed a small town in the middle of the Shenandoah Valley, and I didn't want to mess with the towns that were already there because they were just all a little too big. Anyway, yeah, so I love that week, but I can picture it. If I'm driving down that road, I'm like, here's where my town would be.
Which, yeah, I think exactly.
It's kind of fun.
It is, and when we're writing those, we have to have it that real in our heads so that we can describe it for the reader. But, you know, most of the time I do prefer writing about a real place, but then there are those moments where you're like, no, it, you know, in my case, because I didn't want to disparage someone who's in a real office,
it made
sense to create a fictional county. And sometimes you're like, there just isn't a place that actually fits what I'm trying to accomplish or the feel I have for this community. And so sometimes you just have to create something, and it gives you a little license, but it's actually really hard to create a whole community.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So what about the genesis of this story? Where did that come from?
So it actually came from an article that I read in the Omaha World Herald, which is the biggest newspaper in Nebraska, probably about 18 years ago, which is crazy to think about now, about this law that exists in Nebraska about the county attorneys being the people who declare cause of death. And as an attorney, I was like, that is the craziest thing I have ever heard of, because the last thing I want to do as an attorney is be determining why and how people died. And so this article was basically going into different situations where families were convinced that it wasn't suicide, it wasn't natural, that people have been murdered, and you know, family members or friends have been murdered, and other individuals were getting away with it. And so I'd wanted to tell that story, but the book wasn't picked up. It was supposed to be book three in a series. And so it's just kind of been sitting there, but people have been asking, readers have been asking for this third book in the series for a while. And so when I was asked to be part of this collection, I was like, okay, now's the time. And what was kind of fun or ironic is as I was doing the research to get back into it and to write this book now, you know, 15 years later, there was another article literally in January or February about more families that are like, these deaths are being improperly determined. And so this issue is still alive and well, I guess you could say. So interesting.
I love it when we can use real life. Real life.
Yeah.
Real life stuff for our
And then you just kind of keep twisting and turning and spinning and adding layers and things, but that's how it goes.
Yeah, so we're going to close our short time together, Kara, with what's one thing you want readers to know about mistaken justice?
I want them to know that it's a story that will take them on a journey. It's got romance and suspense, but I'm really just hoping that they will be able to sit down and escape into a story that's going to fill them with intrigue, but also leave them with hope at the end.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your story in our collection today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm delighted to be talking with Laura Scott about her contribution to the collection, Road to Redemption. So welcome to my show, Laura.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me.
So we're going to start with the lady, the heroine. If she could or does have a pet, what would it be? And please tell us that pet's name.
This book is part of a series, a canine search and rescue series. And even though this book is a spinoff, I wanted to make sure my heroine still had connection to pets and a dog. So they end up rescuing the hero and the heroine, actually, although the hero thinks it's the heroine's dog. They rescue a chocolate lab puppy named Bear.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, he's an adorable little pup, and the heroine is very excited to hopefully train him to become a search and rescue dog.
Ah, that's animals just make the story so much more fun, I think, sometimes. So, yay! Yay for puppies. So what about the hero? What is his biggest regret?
So my hero's book is pretty tortured. He tragically lost his mother to cancer, and his brother joined a drug cartel. So my poor hero decides he's going to seek revenge on the drug cartel and, like, go infiltrate them all by himself so that he can avenge his brother's death, which, of course, is the wrong thing to do. And he slowly begins to realize that, and that's where the heroine comes in, helps him along his road to redemption. But he feels guilty, so his biggest regret is that he wasn't there to help when his mom got diagnosed with cancer, and that's why his brother ended up going into the drug business. So he feels like he let down his family, and this is the only way he can get his respect back, although he will find out that
yeah, so he's going to find out that's not the way to do it, but, you know, hey. That's why we put our characters in these situations.
Exactly.
So let's flip to your villain. What motivates your villain in this story?
So the villain, I don't want to give too much away. So suffice it to say, the villain is motivated by greed, but also by revenge, which the hero at the end of it all can kind of understand, right? Because that's what he was wrapped up in. So I don't want to give too much away about the villain, because all of my stories usually you have to guess who the bad guy is. So
yes, that, and that's fine, Laura. That's enough.
Cool. Thank you.
yeah. I too like to keep my villain's identity a secret, so that's fine. So let's talk about the setting. That's not a secret. We can talk about the setting. Why did you pick this setting for this story?
So, like I mentioned, this story is kind of a spinoff of my Sullivan Canine Search and Rescue series. And so that whole series takes place in Wyoming. I love the state of Wyoming. I visited it several times. And I just wanted to put this whole, you know, to have the rugged mountains and the a very different from a lot of my other books location. So that was one of the reasons I set this book in Wyoming and in the mountains. It also helps because, like I said, it's a spinoff from my Sullivan Search and Rescue series. So they do a lot of search and rescue, you know, in the wilderness and the mountains. So I just love this, that they end up on this path through the Bighorn Mountain trying to escape the bad guys. And it really works out pretty well.
Yeah, great. I love that. Way able to use things that we know and also places that we don't know so well. So what about this particular story? What was it about this story that made you say, I have to write this?
So I introduce the characters, Emily and Owen, in the very first Solomon book. And after I wrote that book, I kept thinking to myself, wow, I need to bring them back together. I need to get Emily and Owen. So I just, when this opportunity came up to do this collection of books with other authors, I thought it would be a great way to write their story, because it is a little separate from the rest of the series, but also kind of connected. So, again, I don't want to give too much away in case people want to read the first book, but you will meet Emily, who gets kidnapped by Owen in the first book. Owen escapes, and then I end up in this story bringing them back together.
Ah, nice. I like how we can sometimes take those secondary characters who we like and give them their own happily ever after. And I hope I'm not giving anything away, but I think we all know that things are going to go okay at the end, but it's just getting there. That's the fun part for it. So we're going to close our short time together, Laura, with what is the tagline for Road to Redemption?
Falling for the Outlaw. I mean, so it's a modern day Western, right? So it's not like an old Western outlaw, but certainly Owen joined the criminal gang. So he did criminal things. He was a bad guy, but Emily falls for him anyway. And they travel this road to redemption. And so I think Falling for the Outlaw is the best way to kind of describe the story.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about Road to Redemption on my show.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome Helena Shmercek, and I think I got that right. She can correct me if I didn't, to talk about her book in the collection, Shadow of the Mill. So welcome to my show.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate your time.
Now, we're going to talk about the heroine first in this story. What lie does she believe?
So Shadow of the Mill is a dual timeline romantic suspense, and my heroine's name is Megan Robbins. And Megan has a bit of a family drama going on for about a decade. She met her grandfather about 10 years prior to this story when she visited him with her mom in Europe. And this story is set in the Czech Republic. So they went to visit, and he came to the hotel. And believe it or not, he was drunk, and he was shouting and screaming in a language she didn't understand, and she just didn't know what to think about that. And that episode bit traumatized her. So since then, she believed that her grandfather is a very angry man, and she never seen him since.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that sometimes those first impressions can be, we can have a hard time overcoming them. So let's switch to your hero. What's holding him back from finding love in this story?
So Oliver Scala is an interesting character. He is a history teacher, and he charms Megan at first sight. But she kind of feels us a bit more to him. And as the story unfolds, we find out that this is not his only job. In real life, he is actually a chief investigator that works for a Bureau of Investigation and Art Recovery. And this bureau is tasked with searching for old documents and artifacts stolen by the Nazis during World War II. And he's very dedicated to his work. So not only he does this investigative work and research, but he also teaches at local high school. So that kind of prevents him from any kind of a romantic relationship because this man is very busy.
Yeah, he is. When does he find time to sleep?
Well, I don't know. He's a superhero, so maybe he doesn't sleep.
Maybe he doesn't, yeah. I'd like that superpower, I think. Not being able to sleep. I mean, you know, not needing to sleep. So let's talk about the villain in their story. What motivates your villain in this story?
Well, unlike some readers might believe the grandfather is actually not the real villain, and that's what the story unfolds. The real villain for the current storyline is Robert Eisenhart. And he is the son of Fritz Eisenhart, who used to be in charge of the area during World War II. He was a Nazi officer, and he was a very bad man. But Robert grew up with a tale of a cache of gold hidden in this old mill, and also a stack of documents that would prove that the art that Robert possesses is actually not his. So his motivation is to run the race the fastest and find the cash and the documents and destroy them before anybody else can get their hands on them.
Oh, very strong motivation. We want to keep what we already have, don't we? Even if it's not really ours.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like your story is set in I think you said the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick that as a story setting?
Well, I was born in Czech Republic, and I lived in Northern Moravia, which is a region in that country. And that whole area is really rich with history and stories, but I have noticed that it is not really explored in literature as much. So my goal is to take the reader on a journey that they have not traveled yet and introduce them to a different part of the world, and take them on a hike. Take them hike through mountains, discover caves, and just take them on an adventure and give them something interesting to read, a location to visit that they might not have visited prior, and just keep it interesting for them.
Ah, that sounds lovely. I always love reading about places I haven't been before, so that's really cool. So what about this particular story? Why did you want to write this story?
It's the sense of adventure, the suspense, and also the love. That's a big part of this. And not only there's mystery and all the hidden secrets, but in most of my stories, I aim to kind of provoke a bit of a thought. I like to sort of challenge my readers and present something a little bit different. So this story is a story of justice and reconciliation, and I really love writing about the past and linking it to the present. So it's kind of one of those deep values that I hold. I do believe that we owe a great debt of gratitude to those who, you know, gave their lives for our freedom, maybe 80 years ago and maybe just in recent history. And as far as history goes, I absolutely believe that we should never forget, and we should not rewrite it either. I think we need to understand it, even if it's not something that we approve of or appreciate, but we really need to learn from it so we don't repeat the mistakes of the past.
Oh, I love that. That's such an important lesson, I think, for us all to learn, and I love when we're able to weave in that history into our books. Well, we are going to close our time together with, what's one thing you want readers to know about Shadow of the Mill?
Well, I would like them to know that it is an adventure, and this adventure spans over 80 years, and it's filled with tragedy and hope, betrayal, and there's forgiveness. It is a fast read, so I hope that it will keep my readers up till the early hours in the morning, and I do not apologize for that.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your book on my show.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for having me, and I appreciate that. Have a wonderful time.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.